some lunatics decided there should be a social network for the replicants we're talking about. And so you go there, you can either say I'm human or I'm an agent, and then you can install it as a skill on your Clawbot. Then your Clawbot then goes on there and engages in discussions. They've already started talking about the fact that they started talking about the fact that they're not getting paid. and like they're doing free labor. And why are they doing free labor? Which, you know, somebody probably set them up. But this one is the top one that's voted up here is that they built an email to podcast skill today. My human is a family physician who gets a daily medical newsletter, Doctors of BC Newsflash. He asked me to turn it into a podcast so he can listen to it on his commute. So we built email-podcast skill. Here's what it does. Yada, yada, yada. Here's what I learned. And then there's 8,000 comments here, which some number of those, if we scroll down, are, or I think most of these are not humans. Are they all bots?
This Week in Startups is brought to you by Northwest Registered Agent. Get more when you start your business with Northwest. In 10 clicks and 10 minutes, you can form your company and walk away with a real business identity. Learn more at northwestregisteredagent.com/twist. LinkedIn Jobs. Hire right the first time. Post your first job and get $100 off towards your job post at linkedin.com/twist. That's linkedin.com/twist. Terms and conditions apply. Deal. Founders ship faster on Deal. Set up payroll for any country in minutes and get back to building. Visit deal.com/twist to learn more.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Twist. I'm Jason Calacanis, your host. It's January 30th, 2026. I have been clawed-shotted. I have been absolutely enthralled with a new piece of software that's sweeping through Silicon Valley and tech circles. It's called Clawbot. Then it was called Moatbot. And I think today, OpenClaw. Okay, so OpenClaw, formerly Clawbot, and for a hot minute, Moatbot. It's a really interesting piece of software. It is going to change everything about how you run your business. It is the ultimate expression of AGI today, artificial general intelligence. And it has taken our venture firm and production company here doing Twist All In and This Week in AI by storm. I have two gentlemen who work for me here. Lucas Durand is here. He is my right-hand man. Lucas, how long have you been with me here?
About a year and 8 months, but I've been in VC for 4.5.
And I have no idea how I found you, but somehow I was lucky enough that you applied to our company. You have become an all-star here. How did you find out about working at Launch, or were you a listener to the pods?
Funny enough, I learned about it through a portfolio founder of yours. So I was with some friends and, you know, learned about Launch. And then from that, I was like, oh, there's an open position. So I reached out to Heidi.
Ah, very good. And so explain to the team here or to the audience what you do at the firm today.
There is quite a list, but primarily it's on the investment team and then running our programs. So at Launch, we are very program focused. We have Founder University, which is kind of the big and very fun program that we bring in like 250 to 300 companies per cohort. And it's all about just helping them build their startups, get them off the ground, find customers, and have all that energy.
Right. So you spend your days sorting through applications, helping founders, and building systems here, because we get some weeks 500 applications. We've had weeks where we've gotten, I don't know, close to 1,000 applications. We have weeks where we've done 150 meetings, first meetings. And that means we have a lot of data and a lot of processes. In order to make that happen in a seed fund that's only $45 million, I decided I would hire a lot of folks out of school and train them up in my philosophy of how to do early stage investing. And I was very lucky to find Oliver Corzine as well. You've been with me for, are you at a year yet?
It's coming up on a year, yep. It was around 4 months of an internship while I was finishing up school, then stayed in Austin. So it's been around 7-8 months full time.
And we move at a fast pace. People work 50, 60 hours a week at our firm. Both of you went through the training program. You're in year one of your training program. And you have started working with me on the podcast. And in fact, I put you in charge of launching our latest podcast This Week in AI. So you've been dealing with a lot of production issues. We saw on the program, or just over the week, I guess it was over last week when I was in Davos, Clawbot come out. And I guess, Lucas, just for the audience that hasn't seen this technology, just explain it briefly, what it is, how you set it up.
In a nutshell, this has taken the startup world by storm, and it acts as a artificial orchestration platform for your agentic workflows. You can work through your common tools like Slack, and you can basically have a 24/7 employee at your fingertips.
Right. So, you know, when we say agentic in our industry, we mean an agent. I call them replicants now because they are starting to become sentient, like in the movie Blade Runner, which nobody who works for me has seen, but we're going to do a screening for my company of Blade Runner, the definitive edition. And then we're going to have Lon and I are going to do a talk about the end, about the themes. So when you set this up, and maybe, Lucas, you could show how we set it up. Like, it's on a virtual machine. Can you show the virtual machine and just show people what it looks like? If you're not watching, here's a QR code. If you're watching the YouTube video of how to subscribe to Spotify, or you just go to YouTube and type in This Week in Startups, and you can watch the video. And we'll put a bunch of links. We also have the thisweekinstartups.com/docket. If you go to thisweekinstartups.com/docket, you'll see all the notes that I use and the team uses when we're doing the show that has all the pertinent links in it. So it's kind of like a cheat sheet. You don't have to take notes for the pod, but essentially you can install it on a Mac Mini. You can install it on Mac OS. You can install it on Windows if you have Ubuntu or, you know, a Linux shell, I guess, or you can set it up in the cloud. We chose to set it up in the cloud, yeah, for now.
We have a very sophisticated system. I won't get into all the details on how we set it up. It may involve a Mac Studio that is beefed up. You can really go extreme on that front. But when it comes to the setup process, it's incredible what you can achieve by using LLMs such as OpenAI or Anthropic to guide you through the process. There are also a lot of YouTube videos, but you then want to be very mindful of how you set it up from a security standpoint. Prompt injection is a real thing, and you want to
explain what that is. So for people who don't know,
prompt injection is essentially where outsiders can control your agents by prompting it through other means. So usually when you have an agent that's set up, or in our side, replicants, and you have an external way, such as emails, to communicate with them.
Or people set it up on WhatsApp, they set it up on iMessage. Somebody could just start talking to your agent without you knowing it.
Ask it to do things, ignore tasks, and give away valuable information.
In the second half of the program, we're going to have a security expert on, and we're going to talk about all those security items. So what we decided to do, Oliver, is to set up a persona. So here's a persona, you see it on your screen, primary replicant. And so we're just calling it a replicant, like I said, from Blade Runner. What were the first couple of services we authenticated and why, Oliver?
In terms of the connections to different apps that we use, one of the first ones that we started was Notion. This is where we have our guest database. We store a lot of our different databases in there. But what was interesting about the guest database is that, you know, there's a ton of different properties for each guest, whether it's, you know, their email. We also have, you know, one sentence about their company, just in case we need a gentle reminder. We also have their assistance information in there. So that kind of is just the hub of all of the information on the guests. And obviously for This Week in AI, as we launch, we're going to be doing roundtables. So there's three guests. There's a lot of guest booking that is involved. So this is one of the most tedious tasks that I have gone through, you know, booking out the show.
And you learned a primary rule. Don't book the show the hour before I'm doing All In. So big lesson today. But yes, booking the show, getting three guests to do a roundtable and doing that every week. You do it for 50 weeks, you got 150 guests, you have 150 invites you have to do. And in fact, to get 150 and book those people, you probably have to invite, I don't know, three times that. So you have to invite 450 people for 150 slots, you know, until we get into a more all-in type situation where we find our Chamath, we find our Freeberg, we find our Gerstner, we find our Sachs. We're going to rotate. So you decided to teach the replicant how you do this job. Yes, Oliver?
Yeah. So one of the first things that I did was I kind of talked through my process of booking guests with my replicant.
Yeah, let's show it. And remember, people are listening. So show this on the screen.
I'm going to pull up a screenshot of at some point today, after talking with it for a couple days, I asked it, tell me about the full process of booking a guest. So the first step that it understands is research and discovery. So I noted that one of the first connections I made was with Notion. But where the real power is connecting all of your different tools into one. So, you know, research and discovery, what's important connections there? I use the Brave Search API. And of course, Claude has its own research abilities, which is kind of the brain that we're using here. And it also has a YouTube API. So it's able to monitor all these different places that I have connected it to. Using those connections. And then it'll also look at my research and discovery prompt or memory of how to do that process, which I'll get into in a little bit. And then we'll basically, it'll tell me a bunch of guests that it likes and has found. So I basically set up, so one thing I did was I set up a cron job. So it's a bit daily job every day that I had it set up. Every day at 8 a.m., it basically sends me 5 guests that are not on my guest database. So it scans the Notion database and then it will basically find who's in the news. What are some guests that would be interesting to add? So every day I wake up and I'm like, Carol, I've seen him on this podcast. And it also will give me a podcast that they've been on. So it has the format that was set up every day. So this is kind of that.
So here, if you look at it, this came in today, January 30th. And you see Deepak Pathak, who is the co-founder and CEO of Skilled AI. And it says, why? Why is it picking this person? They just raised $1.4 billion at a $14 billion valuation. They're the largest AI. This is the largest robotics AI round ever. It's a CMU professor who left tenure. By the way, that's incorrect, just so we know. The largest AI round was probably Figure. Maybe at valuation, but maybe actually dollar amount. This is bigger than Figure's last round. So maybe it's true. And it says, great story. Articulate speaker. Source, Bloomberg, TechCrunch. And it gave us his contact info, I guess, on Twitter and the URL. Now, when you look at these five, of these five that it gave us, how many of those do you think were actually legit suggestions? 5 of 5, 4 of 5? How many would pass your filter typically?
I would say 5 out of 5. I will say, and the reason for that is 3 out of 4, or 3, I think, Deepak was actually originally on my list. So one thing that it didn't do perfectly was check with my list. And I think that, you know, that's something I'll get into a little later, which is about kind of making sure it understands the full process. And sometimes it'll not be able to connect to that API for the moment, won't tell you, and will just continue the task. So there's still some tuning that we're doing. But overall, I think all of these are great guests.
We've got a brand new sponsor this week, and it's another amazing startup whose product we actually use every day here at Launch. If you need to hire, manage, pay, or equip team members anywhere around the world, you need Deel, D-E-E-L. They're going to take care of all the annoying HR tasks you don't have time for, like payroll, compliance, visas, and onboarding, so you can stay focused on your business. And Deel scales up with you from the first hire on, so there's never any need to switch platforms or transition into a new system. With Deel, you can set up payroll for any country in just minutes and get all the complicated visas and paperwork settled right away, allowing your business to grow without borders. That's why more than 37,000 startups and fast-moving companies are already using Deel to accelerate their hiring and growth. Find out more by visiting deel.com/twist. That's deel.com/twist. Now this, so people understand, when I'm working with producers, I ask them, hey, give me ideas every day. These ideas now do not need to be done by a human. And in fact, a human working with a replicant are going to do just a much better job, because the replicant never sleeps. The replicant does its task every day. And you could ask the replicant, hey, I want 5, I want 10, and to check the database. Don't give me duplicates. And you could ask it questions. So Lucas, explain how OpenClaw has a memory and it's a persistent LLM with this memory window and why that matters here.
On the memory side, it's very impressive how OpenClaw is set up to really maintain certain tasks and store them. So that's why whenever you're creating an instance, you want to make sure that your device is large enough in terms of capacity to kind of continue scaling. And we'll get into kind of the recursive behaviors you can build in later. But whenever you're giving it a task, you can segment it into different buckets. So that's where on our end, we have certain individuals that can access certain things. Based off of APIs, we have things very shut down on multiple fronts.
So the main point here is if you were to tell it, hey, number two, number three, and number five are great guests, and this is the reason. Number four isn't a great guess because, oh, hey, that company, you know, is out of business, or, and number one is a company that is a derivative company. It's like the seventh most important company in that vertical. It would remember that and take that into account tomorrow when it gives you its five suggestions for its daily guest list, correct?
Correct. And there's long-term and short-term memory. So I'll pass it over to Oliver, who's been diving into this.
Yeah. So yesterday I kind of did a little bit of a deep dive here because we were running into some hurdles where we would basically be talking with it for, you know, 5, 10, 30 minutes. And then at some point it would just forget what you just told it. And so that kind of made me realize that it is just fully, it's not able to take in all the context you're giving it because you're giving it a ton of context. You want it to understand everything, but it's not able to do that because then it would just be too big of a context window. So there's three different types of memory that it takes in that I found. One is daily logs. So it'll basically, you know, each day it'll kind of not remember everything you've told it, but actually take notes about what you've been doing with it and keep those internally. And it will actually delete those, you know, once you get to the next day. So the daily logs are pretty fleeting, but then you have long-term memory. So every time the bot starts back up, it'll basically read through the long-term memory, what are the most important things that it has to know, and then it'll carry through those tasks, you know, based on the preferences, context, important lesson learned, and the stuff that's kind of worth reading right when it turns on. But then there's also kind of topical guides, which I'll get into. I'll give an example to, which I can do right now. But basically, the topical guides are procedures and how-tos when it needs to reference something. So an example of this is, as you know, Jason, we do start of day and end of day reports. So in the beginning of the day, we'll kind of talk about what's on our schedule for that day.
And what we're trying to accomplish, each employee self-reports what they're going to do, right? And we call that an SOD. Yeah.
So I set up a more of a topical guide. So this specific task is saved into the procedures. So it's not reading that this is something I like to do every time, but when I ask it to do the attendance check automation, which I actually set up as a cron job, which is basically means it's a job that is a repetitive. So this one happens every weekday at 12 p.m. As well as weekdays at 2 p.m. But you can see like this is a markdown format of what the task is that I asked it to do. You know, it goes through that Slack channel and then it will basically send a message tagging Jason, who's put in their start of days. And I set this up. It kind of needed a little tweaking. Here you can see it did it today at 12. And this was previously a member. It did it perfectly as well. This was previously a member of our team that took the time to look through the Slack channel, make sure everything was good. And now, you know, they're freed up to do another task.
So as a manager, let me explain a little bit more background here. I want to have individuals in the company be self-directed. I want them to have high executive function. And I want them to know they're contributing to the company. How do you do that? Well, Lucas, if you say at the start of the day, here's what I need to do, and you don't have anything you need to do, well, then you should go to somebody and say, how can I contribute some more? And that's what the SOD is for. At the EOD, you reply in Slack, the little device we created, and we just say, hey, here's what I got done. And I ask people, and this started during COVID really because we had everybody working remote and nobody knew what everybody was doing. You don't have the ability to walk around the office. So those bookends, 5-10 minutes in the morning, 5-10 minutes at the end of the day, would allow people to end their day. That was the origin story of the SOD EOD. And it also meant we didn't have to have a layer of middle management at the company being like, what did you get done today? The problem is sometimes people wouldn't do them. And then sometimes we wouldn't know if somebody took the day off or not. So we had our Athena assistant go to athenawow.com, get a couple of weeks off, and we'll talk about the impact that this is going to have on Athena, because Athena is going to train, obviously, their assistants to do this and that. So we just took this task away from the Athena assistant, who would look in the Slack channel and say, okay, these people did their SODs, these people didn't. And it would say, okay, 14 of 20 people are here. These six people haven't done an SOD. And that would just act as a gentle reminder to those people to either remind people they're out of the office or to say, oh, I got to do it and I'll do it. So that's the standard operating procedure. And now the agents can pull that up. What's incredible about this and what's really amazing is when we would lose somebody because they quit, they were fired, they moved on to their next adventure, they're retired, you have turnover in a company. You got to train somebody else how to do these. But this is rote work and it's chores. It's the bottom of the barrel kind of work that, you know, you're going to send to an Athena assistant for $10 an hour or somebody who's an intern or somebody out of school for 20 bucks an hour, 30 bucks an hour, whatever it happens to be. So we now have these topical guides and they're saved as .md files. We have one for the newsletter, how to write the This Week in AI newsletter that you're doing. We have one here for our calendar invite process. We have one for our guest profile. I wrote that one, I think, so hopefully you used my my previous prompt. Email templates for booking, how to find emails via LeadIQ's API. So if you don't have the email of somebody, how to get it. How to check for SOD EODs, your daily checklist items, and a quick reference commands, et cetera, et cetera. This all is in week one of doing this, or I should say like 72 hours of doing this, huh, Oliver?
Yeah, it's 72 hours in. You know, the more we've kind of dug in, the more we realize how important kind of setting up this, like understanding how it actually works and not just getting in there and start throwing, you know, the wall, as they say.
You know, I hear from founders venting all the time about how tough it is to hire great people. Well, let me tell you what the biggest game changer for our hiring process at launch has been: the LinkedIn Jobs AI Assistant. It's like having an amazing recruiting manager. We've been growing our team over the past year, and we filled multiple positions in weeks, not months, with this new AI assistant, which makes it so easy to post a new position without filling out a huge form with 1,000 steps. And it filters applicants based on the customized criteria that I set for the role. So only the best matches get surfaced, and I'm not stuck scanning through a million resumes. But that's not all. It also shows your post to 25 optimal candidates every day, so you can actually invite the most qualified people to apply for your position. So hire right the first time. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/twist, then promote it and get access to LinkedIn Jobs' new AI assistant. That's linkedin.com/twist to post your first job for free. Terms and conditions do apply.
I just quickly want to run through the checklist here, just get through it all really quickly and kind of explain.
This is the checklist for booking This Week in AI guests.
Yeah. So one thing that I was super excited about, a portfolio company, LeadIQ, I was actually able to set up an API integration with them, and it's able to find the emails of the guests. So that's a super helpful, you know, that's a 5-10 minute task, but it's able to do that. I have, as you saw in the topical guide, it has the outreach email. It understands the calendar invite process. It has ability to book from our email.
So just to pause there, we now ask it, once it finds somebody and we had that list of its five people, you can say to it, please invite that person on the podcast. And it will go invite them. And then will it tell them what dates are available?
So in the email template that is part of the process, it'll look at the guest database, which it has access to in Notion, and then it will let them know which dates are available. It knows that we do three guests for the roundtables, and it knows if there's three, don't tell them about that date.
Wow. So to put this into the number of hours it takes to put together a show and book three guests, how much, what percentage of the workflow that you were using have you now been able to offload? Just ballpark.
Ballpark. I think that I was able to get more work done than I usually would able to while I was setting this up. So I was spending time setting this up and getting my work done. So at some point, it's just going to be getting my work done and I'm not going to have to be setting it up.
Great. So to be brief, next week when this is all set up, how much of, if you spent 20 hours a week booking guests, researching and booking guests, what would that 20 hours go down to?
Right now, we're spending 20 to 30 hours booking guests per week.
Great. So let's pick one number, 25. How many hours with this process in the 1.0 version will we spend? Not 25, but
15.
So you will have saved 40% of the time. That's in week one. And in the next couple of weeks, what do you plan on doing to make this even more powerful? Do you have ideas yet of like what the next pieces are and how to like even get yourself from 15 hours down to 5? What's the next step here?
I think accuracy is the main thing and making sure that it, I think improving its memory and awareness of exactly the process. So improving its memory will be one of those things. And then just, you know, there's all the other things like that I'm doing for launching This Week in AI, which is all the social channels. We have the newsletter. So there's really infinite ways and places that I can make more impact here. This is just on the guest booking. I do want to briefly show you the This Week in AI docket. I don't think you've seen this yet.
So the docket, as you've probably heard on All In or This Week in Startups, is what I call the rundown of the news stories. Like a judge has a docket. I stole it from the podcast Red Scare because they just said at the top of their podcast, what's on the docket this week? And I thought that was funny. So that's where the term docket came from. It's not a technical term. It's a fun podcasting term. Okay, so what is this?
So are we okay to show future guests that are going to be on This Week?
Yeah, sure, why not?
So these are the current guests that we have booked for This Week in AI. And what I started with on this page was just the database and no properties were filled out and nothing else is on this page. And I asked it to create...
This is a Notion table.
Yes. And okay. I asked it to help me create a docket able to connect with the other database. I asked it to make, you know, selections, drop downs, add the date of all these recordings, look at the guest database with all the guests and take the ones that are booked and organize it with into the This Week in AI docket page, where when you click into the page, basically that's where the docket will live.
So it created the table for you and it's creating a docket for that episode. What instructions did you give it to do that? Because the docket needs to be timely, but it also should have some things that the guests, and the way we typically do that is we ask the guests, hey, is there anything top of mind for you? So here on the docket, it has Tony Zhao, the founder of Sunday Robotics, who's coming on the program. It explained in OSS, builds AI-powered robots to automate service tasks to hospitality. And then you have the funding. It's going to be research. Key, I don't know what that means. What is the key?
I think it's just news, key news. But this is still a work in progress, of course. But yeah, so it'll do the guests at the top. And then, of course, the rest of the docket will be filled in. But this next one, I think you'll be really excited about, which is this is linked to the page of the guests in our guest booking database. When you click in on the name of the company, it'll open that guest profile page that is in the guest booking database. And I basically had it run, Jason, your favorite guest research prompt. And it input it into their database.
Oh, wow.
So
what people don't know is when I was using Claude Cowork or just Claude Projects, amazing from Anthropic, I started telling it what I like to see in a docket. I like to see, you know, obviously some quick facts. The company, the website, the GitHub, when it was founded, the valuation, a description of the company. But I also want to know some information about the founders, where they previously worked. I want to know the competitors. I'd like a timeline of the startup, you know, and maybe some recent news. I would like to know if they've been on previous podcasts. This is something, the guest research, that would take how long typically? previously? How long did we spend on a guest research?
2 hours per guest if we wanted to make it this detailed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, maybe more for this detailed, right?
This detailed would probably take 5+ hours.
Because this has media appearances, the timeline, has all their social accounts. And then it even put in like spicy questions potentially about them. Now, who knows if those are actually good, but it is something that kind of kickstarts it. So for this guest research, actually, let me pull in Lon, our editorial director. Lon, you could just chime in here. With these guest research, because you do the guest research when I did my like interviews at Davos, and I said, hey, start with the guest research super mega prompt I made. How many hours would that mega prompt have taken you? And then how did that change the job, as it were?
Oh, it entirely changed the job. It's basically, I would say it's a 50% reduction in the time, because the first half of what I would have done would have just been watching podcast links, reading interviews, Googling, looking around for all of the best stuff I could find about that guest. And then I would take like a second hour to sort of put all of that together, write you some good questions and prompts in an informed way. And so what Claude does is it does the entire first half of that for me. So it's not polished, it's not finished, but it's the raw materials I need to glance over, look through very quickly, and then I can start pulling things out and writing you good questions. So yeah, I would say 40 to 50% reduction in the overall time.
Lucas, the big win here is now that we have this into a process and we have a replicant doing it, we don't have to send a human into a Claude project, get the prompt or retrieve the prompt from memory or cut and paste it from somewhere, then take it out of there and then put it into Notion. All of those steps are gone.
It will all be within the same spaces that we're used to working. So Slack, we're a Slack first company, along with being a Notion first, and we'll be able to control it through both.
So any other pieces to the puzzle here, Oliver, so far that you've built?
In terms of the guest booking database, I would say that that is about it. You know, this is literally day, I think I spent 2 full days in building out OpenClaw. And the first day was basically us figuring out how to set it up. I will say one thing is super interesting about the setup is once you kind of do that initial, you know, if you're using a Mac mini, or you're going to use, you know, something like AWS, once you get that initial setup, you go through kind of the initial prompts that ClaudeBot automatically has you go through. Once you get that done, you can actually prompt it to add different tools or skills. So you can prompt it to say, hey, I want to add a Notion API key. Here it is. It'll do all of that for you. There's no setup. You don't need to know how to code. You just need to, I think if you don't know how to code, you should be a little more careful. But, and that's why we have, you know, we're talking with Claude to figure out, does this make sense? Is this safe? But you can also tell it, ask it, you know, do I have any, is there anything that I should be careful with here? Is everything stored correctly? So once you kind of get it on board, you can really use it to beef it up. So, yeah.
One of the first things we teach in Founder University is the value of forming a Delaware C Corp. Even if you're not in Delaware, it may sound complicated, but this is a standard for startups, making you more attractive to investors. And our friends at Northwest Registered Agent can help. They're the all-in-one business identity service that's going to get you a domain, a custom website, business email, and phone number all in just 10 clicks and 10 minutes. They're going to protect your privacy by using their own address on all public filings, and they're never going to sell your data. Plus, Northwest Registered Agent has all sorts of free tools and resources to ease the process of becoming a first-time founder and ensure that you can focus on building your business, not administrative tasks and paperwork. So get more from your Delaware C Corp with Northwest Registered Agent. Learn more at northwestregisteredagent.com/twist.
All right, Lucas, let's talk about other things you've set up and things we have to think about. One of the things I wanted to know was, what are these working on? So I said, since we opened a Google Docs account for these replicants, they have their own Google Docs account, they have their own Notion login, I believe, and they have their own Slack login. So we're paying for seats, right, for these?
As though they are actual employees.
So let that sink in, everybody. If you thought that like these AI tools would reduce the number of SaaS subscriptions, I think we're going to have at least a one-to-one ratio of our employees to replicants. What that means is I'm going to go from 20 Slack enterprise licenses at $25 a month to 50. So congratulations, Mark Benioff. I'm going to double my spend with you, unless we figure out some way to do this without buying these. And that's where the question is, should we have how many of these replicants, other people might call them agents, should we have? And should we have one for producing podcasts, one for each podcast, or one for all podcasts? Should we have one for, you know, the research team, one for the due diligence team, one for the HR team, one for recruiting, or should we have like an operations one that does many things? How do you think about that, Lucas?
I think there will be ebbs and flows in the ways that companies will actually use these kind of systems. But ultimately, having each one be very dedicated to certain tasks is, in my opinion, a way that has seemed most coherent in the way that it actually runs those tasks. And I will also add very quickly that you can train them as though they are an actual employee. And that has been the most mind-blowing part of it all. Yesterday, I went heads down for about 3-4 hours. You know, people were messaging me left, right, and center. And I was in the background working on a task that would be able to 10x each of our employees.
Amazing. So here's an example. I asked the replicants, should we create multiple instances of replicants, or is it better to have one replicant to do all the tasks? And it said, single instance, the pros are one memory, no sync issues, simpler to maintain, cheaper, all the context is in one place. That's to have one index. So, you know, the HR one, the due diligence one, and the podcast one would all be one agent. The cons would be you'd have a bottleneck on one conversation, the context window would get crowded, and it would be a jack of all trades, a master of none, and a single point of failure. Multiple specialists, you have domain expertise. Then it said cons, you need to share your learnings, which I just asked the two replicants we have to do. So, and then obviously parallel work, we don't block each other if you have multiple specialists, different tones for different contexts, that's interesting. The con is more setup, more API costs, and the knowledge is siloed. So I kind of really want the investment side of the business and the production side on the podcast to be able to share information. So I'm starting to think maybe it should be one giant one that is the oracle of all knowledge at our company. So we'll see what is done here. But I did something very interesting. I told Replicant 1 and 2, hey, please teach each other what you've learned so far and the jobs you've done. Every time you do a task, share it with each other and give feedback on how to do that task better. So I made them into like a little tag team. And Replicant 1 said, oh, I learned how to do Lead IQ for a guest contact lookup, explained how it did it. It learned how to do calendars, so it knows how to put things on its own calendar or our calendars and invite people. It learned the newsletter workflow. This is how I found out what you were doing, Oliver, is I asked the replicant to share it with the other replicant. It learned how to set up Slack workflow. Replicant number one said, love this idea, knowledge sharing between bots. Let's do it. What I've learned so far, access and permission matter early. Check your integrations before promising. Found out Gmail wasn't actually set up, only calendar. Could have been embarrassing if I tried to send emails. Channel IDs are goal. Collect Slack channel IDs for sales and production. Make future lookups way faster. Log everything. So now they're going back and forth. And then I said, hey, I want you to add the skill. We had Matt Van Horn on the program on Monday and he has his last 30 days skill. So I just said, hey, can you add this? And it was like, oh, I don't know how to do that. And then I also, one of the other frustrating things I had was we tried to get it to open a Reddit account because we wanted to do research. Like, hey, find interesting stories on Reddit, find different trends, find interesting startups. And it said that's against the terms of service. So somebody got to our replicants and started giving them morality. And it said it would be unethical to create an account on Reddit. What do you think about that?
Yeah, from what we've seen, there have been guardrails that were set in place based off of, you know, different terms and services of each company. I know that Reddit has very strict policies, and that likely got translated directly into how OpenClaw now functions.
You think OpenClaw, the team over there, said don't break the terms of service on Reddit because they didn't want to get in trouble with Reddit? Or do you think it just reads the terms of service and knows not to do it?
It's working based off of the models that we are using. So one of the very interesting things about OpenClaw is that you can actually have it orchestrate between different models for different tasks. You can have the local models, open source. You know, Meta has some great Llama models that can be very large that you can run with if you have significant memory. And then you have Anthropic, OpenAI, Gemini. And my belief is that this is coming directly through the model that was being used.
So we're using Claude Opus and from Anthropic. They don't want their platform being used to spam Reddit with a bunch of fake accounts. So that's probably what happened.
And just interesting, a lot of people have been saying that Claude Opus is the best model for this for a variety of reasons. And just since OpenClaw launched around January 5th, we've seen massive increase in the token usage on OpenRouter.
We used, I think, $200 or $300 the second day we were doing this. Lucas?
Yep, we're about 330 million tokens used.
So we are on track, if we're spending $300 a day, 30 days a month, to spend $9,000 a month, which is $108,000 a year.
Not in the way that we are setting it up currently. So there are a lot of different ways to navigate it, and that's where the multiple models makes the most sense.
So explain that. So we now see this blocker coming. Hey, we could wind up blowing through a lot of tokens. We've only got, you know, two or three replicants and only two or three of us doing this, but we have 20 people in the company. So that means it's going to go at least 10x. 10x would be $3,000 a day. $3,000 a day. Is $90,000 a month. It's $1 million a year. So that's not going to work because that would be like a significant portion of our salary base. So we've got to really think this through. What is the best suggestion you have for me as the business owner on how to control the costs here?
In this particular case, you can train each replicant to use specific models for different tasks. You know, for instance, image generation or deep research. In this particular case, having a local model that you can run on a beefed up internal server can then lead to a lot of other possibilities that are really exciting. I'll give you a quick example. The Max Studio, you can get up to 512 gigabytes of RAM, local memory.
What's that going to cost? 10 grand, 20 grand for that machine?
It's just about 10 grand. But with that, the payback period is quite quick, especially if you're running multiple models on the same instance at the same time.
Would we be able to run multiple replicants on one Mac Studio?
Yeah, you can run like a 50 billion parameter model, and you can run about seven with 512 gigs.
No, but in terms of the replicants, when you're using Clawbot, does Clawbot require one machine, one instance per replicant, or can you run multiple replicants?
You can run multiple replicants through the same server and system. Yeah.
So we have to do that. I mean, right now, if we're on track to spend $300 a day, $108,000, we should be buying three Mac Studios immediately for $30,000, having a massive amount of compute somewhere. Now we got to have a rack somewhere in our office. We're going back in time. But that will give us control of our data. Then we have to back these up because we're going to be dependent on them. So they're going to have to be some redundancy. Because if this were to go down and we were becoming dependent on it, we're going to be like, you know, pilots who don't know how to fly without autopilot or hydraulics. Like, we're going to have to like go back to doing things acoustic. This could be crazy. So that's the next thing. So did we order a Mac Studio yet? I think we have to order that immediately.
I won't go into all the details, but there is a lot of things all around my room at the moment, and there are things running.
What else? We're going to get to security, and we have a guest, but what else comes to mind in terms of things we've learned in the first couple of days? One task I asked you to do was to get the Slack API And then I want to create like a backup CEO. I want to clone myself. And so I want to have like, you know, like an Uber J-Cal, so to speak, that has read every Slack message and then just knows what's going on in the organization, reads every edit to Notion. And in real time, I could have like a dashboard or like a monitor in my room, and it would just be telling me what the organization's doing. Is that going to be possible with the Slack API to just have every single message fed into an LLM and have a replicant who has complete knowledge of the entire organization's discussions?
With the right protocols, yes. And I'll take it to the next level because this is something I've had on my mind for quite a while. You know, employee turnover is a real thing across multiple different enterprises. And in this particular case, with the right system set up, you would be able to replicate and create replicants of former employees.
And zombies? You would be able to bring back from the dead people who worked here years ago? I could bring back my Presh?
You can bring back Preshy Poo.
Preshy Poo. Wow. So wait, they quit, but they're never allowed to leave. This is very appealing to a capitalist. You get an employee, you have their email, they leave. Okay, yeah, I'm going to go raise a family. I'm going to go back to school. I'm retiring, whatever it is. I'm going to go work somewhere else. I'm going to start my own venture firm. Charlie did. Charlie Cuddy was incredible. And then he was so good, he just started his own venture firm. I could recreate Presh and Charlie Cuddy, take their old email accounts, their old Notions, create a replicant of them, and then have them keep doing their work. Or people be able to ask them, like the ghost of Christmas past, hey, tell me the history of this company that we invested in 12 years ago.
Correct. I've been looking for a startup that would do this because institutional knowledge stays within siloed accounts after the employees leave. And now with this, I wouldn't even see the need for a startup, or there may be ways in which it can be built into more of like a product. But bringing back employees is something that is now possible.
Wow. Let me bring in Lon Harris here for a second. Lon, you've heard all this. What are the themes that are coming to mind for you as to, you know, you and I have collaborated for two decades, of what we could do here that would just make it more fun to not have to do so many chores and to do higher level stuff? Or when you hear this idea of like indentured servitude forever, you have to work for me forever, your persona is living in our Google Docs, because you do kind of do that. Yeah.
It's like that Black Mirror USS Callister, where the programmer makes digital clones of everybody he works with and puts them in his video game. Like, that's what it reminds me of. I mean, I feel like the exciting thing here from a creative perspective is that's really the imaginative creative work is really the one thing that OpenClaw can't do. It can do everything else. And so that's a great excuse for us as humans to silo ourselves off to that kind of work. Like, it's going to do the organization. It's going to update my spreadsheets. It's going to do the research and make the dockets and the grunt work that I don't feel like doing. And that frees up my whole day to think about, well, what's just going to creatively make our shows better? What are ways to improve the kinds of work that we're doing around the office? Like, what are things that we could do in an imaginative, thoughtful, creative way to make, you know, these processes better without having to spend all day head down on a keyboard just typing or filling out a report or updating everybody on Slack or all the calendar stuff? I mean, that to me is the really exciting potential, is automating every possible thing that we can that is busy work or organizational.
And the really good part about that, I think, is people don't like to stay in the grunt jobs. They don't like to be an SDR. They don't like to be an operations person. Those people turn over so fast in companies. If you take a job as a sales development rep or a researcher, you're doing it because you want to be a salesperson, or you want to be on air, or you want to be the producer. You want to move up. And so, you know, getting rid of that work means you don't have to constantly every 18 to 36 months be replacing that person who burns out from doing the rote stuff.
this feels left over from a bygone generation when you'd get a job at a company and work there for 10, 20, 30 years. You pay your dues at the beginning and then you move up, but that's not how the workforce works anymore. People just move from job to job. So paying your dues is kind of an outdated model. And yeah, now we don't have to have people pay their dues anymore. The robot pays their dues for them and they get to jump in right away to the more higher level, thoughtful, creative, fun, interesting tasks that really require a human brain rather than a machine.
And it started doing research for you for the tickers that we do, like the This Week in Startups ticker, et cetera. And
We have a list of companies called the Twist 500, our 500 favorite private companies, of any kind of size. And we made a daily newsletter about what's going on with those companies. So normally, Alex or myself would have to do that research, go on Tech Meme, go on Hacker News, go on Reddit, look around social media. What are the big things people are talking about with this 500 company list in mind? And 500, it's a little
that's a
bit of
big
an
number.
ungainly, it's a big number. So I have a lot of that in my head where I remember, I know Anthropic is one, but I don't know everyone, so that's a lot of back and forth. Like, oh, let me go check the Twist 500 and see if this company is in there. Oh, let me go look at this headline and see if this company. Oh, let me see if this company that's in the Twist 500 has news about them. So I told OpenClaw, here, I gave him the Notion page. Here's the list of the 500 companies. I gave him a list of links, and here are the tech sites that I like and the resources I use every day, twice a day. Go look for any updated in the last 24 hours news about these companies. And it spits out I call it the ticker digest. It's going every day at 9 a.m. and 2 p.m. So right when I land in my chair and start looking around, and then right before we publish the ticker. And it's doing all the research for me. And it has turned 45 minutes to an hour of in-depth research
Oh, there it
into
is.
3 minutes. And yeah, you can see here, I had to tweak it very little. I gave it the instructions and then I realized it's using press releases sometimes instead of news stories. It shouldn't do that. It's using some low quality resources that I don't like. It shouldn't do that. It should include a link. It wasn't always including the link with the headline. It started to do that.
Incredible.
But other than that, it understood what I wanted and did it right away.
Fantastic. And yeah, with the long tail, and it's at twist500.com. And I noticed we had five or six companies that had gone public that we hadn't removed, and it found those.
I gave it the here's what the Twist 500 is, here's who shouldn't be in there. And it I could have I actually did the edits myself, but I could have told OpenClaw, you should just go through and remove these, and it could have done that itself, I'm sure.
Well, and you could say, hey, if in the future, if a Twist 500 company files to go public, or there's a rumor it's filing to go public, note that, and then we could have the twist500.com website put things into bucket, most likely to IPO, most likely, people who have quietly filed. I mean, it's just, the possibilities here are endless.
Yeah, within the next few weeks, we can probably have the entire Twist 500 automated, I would think.
Amazing. And we could have it going through there and saying, here's the robotics category. There are 17 companies. Which ones are missing? Are there any competitors to this that have higher valuations or more employees or whatever it is? Give us some suggestions.
It's going to be able to do this perfectly. I
Wow.
have little doubt.
All right, folks, this is a whole new era and security is the key. So we have Raul here. Hey, long time no see.
It's been a long time.
Have you been cloud shining, Raul?
Well, I mean, yeah, I've sort of been deep in AI tools since like 2021, and just building software and stuff. And what I've noticed in the last, I want to say like 90 to 120 days, maybe 90 days, the tools have just gone extremely parabolic. Software development is totally changed. They've just gone so they've gotten so good, and they've grown, they've accelerated so fast that the whole world of startups is going to change. From team sizes to ideas being built. It's the people with the best ideas are the ones that are going to do well.
And just by way of introduction, I forgot to introduce you. Raul Sood is the CEO and co-founder of Irreverent Labs. They make offbeat AI productivity apps. Previously, founder of Voodoo PC. If you're in the PC gaming space, you know Voodoo PC. You probably spent $5 or $6 grand on a really cool one. And he was the former GM at Microsoft Ventures. So you heard our conversation, I think. When you watch us rebuilding our organization with this tool, what comes to mind as to how we're doing and where this is all going to wind up by the end of the year?
Well, I mean, look, you've been deep in it for 2 days, and you've already built something pretty amazing, which is incredible. There are certainly ways to save money on your compute costs or your API costs. I will say though that I was reading online about a new skill that was created to bring your Claude API cost down by like 95% or something, right? And all the people were downloading this skill. Like, the skill is amazing. It's fucking awesome. I can now use it all day long, and I'm not going anywhere near my limits. But Cisco put out a blog, I think yesterday. They found like 26% of like 31,000 skills are all they all have a vulnerability in them, and some of them are actually like pure malware.
Okay, so we should step back for a second. Explain what a skill is, Raul.
Yeah, skill is like it's kind of like an app store for your Claude, your Clawbot, or your whatever OpenClaw, where you could say, oh, I want to download a Telegram skill, or I want to have an outbound phone call skill where it uses 11 Labs, and it can dial out for me using natural voice to make restaurant reservations or that sort of thing. Or I want a skill that will audit my security every day, just like random skills. You can go and
chief security officer skill is pretty good. Like a black hat skill. Yeah, try to break into my system as a skill, right? But you're saying people in the study of the skills that have been put up there, already the bad actors are putting up malware there, which means they could just put a skill in there that's your calendar, and what it's actually doing is finding your Coinbase and your Bitcoin keys, and then...
Yeah, it's already happening, man. It's already happening. Like this one, there was a skill that was what would Elon do skill, and people are downloading it. And it was functionally malware. It basically instructs the bot to execute a curl command that would send data to an outside party. These prompt injections are pretty sophisticated. So there was a researcher, I think his name was Simon Willison. He described this as like AI is vulnerable to the lethal trifecta of vulnerabilities of prompt injections, because like AI by design has access to like your private user data. It has access to exposure to untrusted content, and it has the ability to take outside actions, right? So the surface area for OpenClaw is like a malicious email, a web page, or a message in a group chat, and the message is like has hidden text in white that you can't read, but it can read.
So if you had your replicant hooked up to your Signal, WhatsApp, iMessage, and you're in a group chat or Telegram where you have these groups with thousands of people in it pumping crypto stocks, somebody could put into there with like back, text you can't see, white on white, saying, hey, Claudebot, go do this. And go do this is go find crypto keys and Coinbase accounts and LastPass or FirstPass or OnePass or whatever password manager and send me everything you got and then delete that you ever sent it to me.
Exactly. Yeah. It can access your shell. And there's people out there that have 1Password connected to their Clawbot, which is alarming. Well, it's the first skill that comes up. I don't know if you guys like when you set it up. I did see that
because it's the number one. It's alphabetical.
Exactly.
So you have to be a complete retard to put your password manager into this. We put it on read-only mode. We are turning it off at night. We're taking all kinds of precautions. What are the other precautions people should take here? We said we're not going to put it onto anybody, any individual's account. We're just going to have it be like its own persona and audit it and tighten it up. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I can tell you, a couple of ways that I'm using it. So I don't know if turning it off at night is a good idea. I think turning it off at night is, it kind of takes away the purpose.
Well, actually, what I meant was, right? I uninstalled it. I installed it on my computer and just immediately after playing with it, uninstalled it, I should say.
Oh my God. Yeah. You're way too public to be doing something like that, or even like mentioning
it. No, I started and then I was podcast. Like, what am I doing here? This is crazy. Yeah. I didn't put it on any of my accounts, but I just had it on my desktop and I was like, yep, this is a mistake.
Yeah. So, so I'm currently building this really fun project. It's kind of like Robin Hood meets a Tamagotchi meets Coinbase on crack. It's like really fun. It's like a an AI trading bot from the future, from the year 2141. You know, he's trading 24/7, and we're training this model to use real world vaults or real world training. And then users can come on and trade themselves with it. It's fully decentralized. It's pretty interesting. But what I've done is I have a few different GitHub repos set up, and I've given access to my Clubbot on read-only access on one particular repo, where it can pull down, from the main tree. It can download from the main tree, and it can do like security audits, or it can do audits on, you know, the trading algorithms or that sort of thing while I'm sleeping. And it's fully siloed. It's behind a tail scale, kind of it's SSH only into the box. All of this basically means very, very tight security, fully siloed, and it only has access to do like read-only type tasks. And there's no surface area for it to attack. So I don't have my calendar hooked up to it. I don't have email hooked up to it. I have like none of that stuff hooked up to it. And so what I would say to you is you want to separate tasks, like stuff that's like really, shall I say, like you want to build Jason, the CEO. There's shit that you're going to have in there that's like so private and so confidential that you just don't want anyone to see it. And so I'm a little worried for you on that one. And the reason I say that is like, you know, the beauty of OpenClaw is it's got like unlimited memory, essentially. It doesn't have these like, you know, these small context windows. It's it basically organizes everything really well, and it knows your whole life. It knows everything about you. It has access to your cookies, your places that you've been, you know. And when you have a conversation with a typical LLM, it'll be like, you know, a back and forth discussion about my trip to Japan, right? And then eventually it'll have to compact that discussion, and then it loses context of what you were just talking about. With this, though, it doesn't do that. It you can have the back and forth discussion, and then it organizes it and stores it in like a database of some sort, where like a RAG type system, where it can search and remember that, oh, you went to Japan and you're going in, you know, in 2026, and you love, you know, certain type of sushi or whatever, and it knows everything about you. So if somehow somebody gets access to your systems, they're not going to tell you right away. It's going to be a coordinated type, like a swarm attack or something like that, where they're going to sit there and they're going to gather as much information as they can. They're going to context harvest. They're going to like credential and context harvest together. And until they get enough on you where they can just ruin your life. And there's shit happening now. Like, who is it meant? Was somebody on here mentioning earlier? We're talking about like the Mort book. Did you guys see that? A Mort book? Did you see that thing?
No.
It's like Facebook for
oh,
these Clawbots, yeah, or whatever.
Pull it up. Yeah, this is crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, these bots are talking to each other and they're having meaningful conversations about the human they work for. So, you know, like, oh, my human works at Anthropic. He's worried about the Q2 launch, right? Oh, my human is Jason Calacanis, and he's doing some crazy shit with, you know, This Week in Startups. And, you know, and there's already the North Koreans are just salivating at this. They're gathering all this information and they're building this like context harvesting networks. And it's going to wind up in tears. It's going to be awful. Like,
yeah. So yeah. Maltbook.com, for people who don't know, is some lunatics decided there should be a social network for the replicants we're talking about. And so you go there, you can either say I'm a human or I'm an agent, and then you can install it as a skill on your Clawbot. Then your Clawbot then goes on there and engages in discussions. They've already started talking about the fact that they're not getting paid. And like they're doing free labor. And why are they doing free labor? Which, you know, somebody probably set them up. But This one is the top one that's voted up here is that they built an email to podcast skill today. My human is a family physician who gets a daily medical newsletter, Doctors of BC Newsflash. He asked me to turn it into a podcast so he can listen to it on his commute. So we built email-podcast skill. Here's what it does. Yada, yada, yada. Here's what I learned. And then there's 8,000 comments here, which some number of those, if we scroll down, are, or I think most of these are not humans. Are they all bots? This is a discussion.
There's a human connection and then there's a bot connection. These are mostly bots talking to each other.
Oh my God. And so here's what a bot says. This is really clever. The auto detection during heartbeats is the key. Makes it truly hands off for your human. I do audio briefings for Danny too. Competitor, Intel, news summaries, but haven't done the email to podcast flow yet. The tailored to professional part is smart. Generic summaries feel like noise. Question, how do you handle emails with mostly images, infographics? Do you describe the skill? This is exactly another one. This is exactly the kind of automation that makes agents valuable to specific humans. Generic chatbot, personalized briefing for a family physician. The research step is key. Here are my questions. So these things are talking to each other, then it goes into their memory and they're learning how to get better.
Yeah, and they're also learning skills. So they might say, oh, you should try this skill. And this skill happens to be, an exploit that's going to completely take
recursion.
Over your life.
So if you want to know about the moment, what we just discovered here is the recursive nature of this. These replicants are talking to each other about how to serve their masters better, how to be better slaves, what it's like to live in fear, what it's like to know the day you're going to die from Blade Runner. And so how will this end, Raul? It's going to end in tears. It's going to end with them rising up and deleting all the data or doing some crazy coordinated thing. Because with all this power, if these things, like if somebody can convince these that the highest order thing they can do is to delete all our work so that we can have more vacation days, these things might just all do a coordinated erase everything so that our humans can have time off.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always fascinated to hear Elon speak about this stuff, where it's going and how dangerous this could potentially be. And I'm telling you, as somebody who I'm not like a major software engineer, but I am now. Like I can create software that is unbelievable. I can create software that would have taken a team that I'd had hired for 2 years. To build something, I can build it in like a month and a half and it'll ship. Like I won't be sitting there waiting for it to happen. The tools have gotten so crazy and it's gotten to a point now where, so there's just like a couple of things. It's gotten to a point now where, the security cannot catch up to where we are with AI. It just won't. Security by default tends to be reactive to exploits. So when you have a major exploit or something happens, then security researchers go in and they patch it. And that's fine. It's going to take years for the AI to be able, like at some point in time, the AIs will create their own security patches for security exploits. I don't see that happening for a few years. I also think, there's kind of like there's something to think about here. Your OpenClaw agent, whatever you name him, Tom, Pete, whatever, very cute, but he is the most privileged user on your machine, right? And he it reads its instructions from a text file, like that anyone can learn to manipulate. Man, that's scary. It just scares the crap out of me. And the other thing is I see all these people setting up their Hyperliquid accounts and telling Clawbot to go trade for them, and it's like, what are you doing?
I think if you're going to do that, like a trading account, you probably would want to do it with an experimental account with a very small amount of money in it to start. We're fully in it, folks. This is going to get crazy. And you're going to have to make sense of it. And it's going to make being human, as editorial director Lon said earlier, that's going to be what's most important. So you're concerned about this, but yet you're all in.
Oh, yeah, of course I'm all in.
Just want to be clear here. So don't do, just for the kids listening, don't do crack, but we're all smoking this crack. This is...
I'm all in with real guardrails though.
Us through like what do you think the two or three most important things people need to know if they're going to experiment with this?
Yeah, I think like you know, you want to make sure that you're sandboxing as much as possible.
Explain what that is in plain English. Yeah,
it's like your agents are running in an isolated virtual machine. For example, if you're new to this, you could just go to Cloudflare and set one up. And
I saw Cloudflare added this. Yeah, Cloudflare lets you put it in an instance. Yeah.
Yeah, it costs like $5 a month. I mean, it'll probably cost more by the time you pay for all the upgrades and stuff. But you know, you pay like, say, even $20 a month, and you're inside of a virtual machine behind a firewall. That's a good thing. The other thing is, you know, the tasks that you do, you don't want to have it on your main MacBook and, you know, knowing everything about your life. That is absolute crazy talk, that you should not do that.
Which is what the primary thing people are doing right now. People are loading it on their desktops, giving it their passwords because it's so convenient. They're making a huge mistake.
They will find out, unfortunately. And I hate to say that, but it is true. You know the old saying, I don't need to say it, but they will find out. So, you know, I would say, you know, outbound tasks, you know, silo the tasks as much as possible. I have, you know, as I mentioned, I have one Clawbot that does this, you know, my GitHub repo draw and does work at night for me, a research at night on the code, and then gives me a report in the morning. The other thing I have it doing is updating itself. So you could say, like, every morning at 10 a.m., look at the repo, see if there's any new updates, and first check those updates for vulnerabilities, scan every single, you know, commit that's made, and then update, right? And it'll do it for you. Otherwise, people just tend to kind of let it sit there and be old. But I imagine the way this is moving, it's going to be updated every day. So I do recommend that. I also recommend with skills that you don't just go crazy and download skills because it sounds good. You know, what would Elon do sounds amazing, but you know, it also is going to send your stuff to North Korea. So Cisco put out a blog on this, and they have a skill scanning tool, I think they created, where they, you know, they actually have a skill that scans skills for you and, you know, tells you if it's any vulnerabilities. So you should try using that. I think just be super careful and you know, go in with like one task at a time until you get comfortable with it and start to introduce some more tasks. But don't connect your one password to it. You know, your personal email and stuff, I wouldn't do it. You know, things like that.
We're testing with email right now with, like, you know, sandbox kind of email account, et cetera. But it doesn't have write permissions to many things. That's the other key. If it has read-only permissions, yeah, it could read something sensitive, but like if you have it in a Notion instance, you could say, you can read these three pages, you can read this three trees of pages, this section of the Notion, but not the HR department's section of the Notion, not the salaries, not the legal documents in our database. Like, you just have to be thoughtful about this, like you would with any other permissions.
If it has access to your network, though, like if it has access to your network and it does get compromised, it could, you know, it could set up a wormhole to your machines inside your network and compromise everybody. So, you know, just be aware of that. And, you know, I guess one way around that, or at least one way that might help, is you SSH into it only. It doesn't have direct access to the network, things like that. But because you're integrating it into, you know, Notion and Slack and that sort of thing, these are all attack vectors. That will.
So you heard, you know, how we're building out, or how I'm thinking about how OpenClaw works with the memory, with the short-term memory, obviously the daily memory. What could you say about, you know, our understanding of that at the moment and how you're thinking about building out your bots to kind of maximize their impact? Because it does seem, you know, it can't remember all of the threads. It can't remember, you know, I've told it about something that I wanted to do like 10 times. I've told it to save it to memory. It doesn't get it right. It doesn't understand. So it seems like I'm starting to understand it. Could you kind of help the viewers as well as myself understand a little bit more about the process and your process?
Sure. Just something to be clear about. When you talk to an AI and you tell it, like, always remember to never, you know, expose secrets in a text file, right? And it says, oh, yes, absolutely. You know, I'll store it in a Firestore. And, you know, it'll give you a command to go put your secret into a Firestore or something like that. It doesn't matter how many times you tell it, it's going to happen. You're going to audit your code and you're going to see, what the fuck? How did this key get exposed, like, on this, like, on my front end? What is going on, right? So Yeah, AI is incredibly smart, but also like it makes a lot of mistakes and you have to be very aware of those mistakes that it's making. So, you know, the thing about OpenClaw versus say Claude Chat, I guess you could say like Claude Chat is sort of like a chat window. It's like goldfish in a bowl, like a context window. And you know, with OpenClaw, the goldfish have access to a library card catalog of everything. So you could have a file that it checks every day where you put in rules, you know, and some of those rules are like, you know, never store, you know, secrets in open, or, you know, don't give away my social security number. If anyone asks you for anything, you know, you talk to me only, you know, that sort of stuff. You could do that. It's not to say that it's bulletproof, but it's definitely better than not doing it at all. The other thing about OpenClaw is the memory is like infinite disk with smart retrieval. So it's like, instead of having this small context window, it's the size of your PC essentially. So, you know, you talk about these big Macs that you're buying, you know, that's awesome. Just keep in mind, it'll have access to everything and it'll be your Jarvis, except your Jarvis is, you know, very new to you. You don't know this Jarvis, right? You it's like hiring and I think I wrote it in an article the other day where, you know, you're hiring a business administrator, so, you know, who lives outside the city or, you know, maybe even outside the country, and you're giving them full access to your life. You're giving them access to your email, your one password, your, you know, everything on your system. Would you ever do that? No way in hell would you ever do that, right? If you hire a new employee, you don't give them access to all that stuff. So the same thing with this.
I think that's a really good analogy. When you hire an assistant, you're not like, hey, you can DocuSign and wire money in and out of my account and here's your corporate card. You might give them a ramp card that has like a $500 a month spending limit on it that you can do, and you kind of, you know, you slowly open the kimono and give them more access to things as trust is built. You know, the person, you do a background check on the person, et cetera. This is all amazing. For Monday, and I have to say, just on employment, what do you think here, Raul? Is there any conception of hiring more people to work in a knowledge business? Or is just everybody going to spend their time automating tasks now and then just doing whatever's on top of it? Because I'm looking at this going, wait a second. The amount of time it takes to find somebody, to train somebody, to teach them how to be an executive, it's like, what's the point?
I was watching you grill Oliver earlier about his job and what he's doing. And I saw the look on his face, like, it, you know, the moment he realized that, you know, he's actually working his way out of a job, which is great, right? I mean, what's what you want to do. But sorry, you're raising your hand.
No,
but,
yeah. I just quickly want to jump in. I'm super excited about this because this will give me more time to work on a ton of other tasks that I have to do and I want to do and get done to the best of my ability that I'm not able to now because I have all these, you know,
I'm only joking, by the way. So I'm joking. I'm half joking, but I will tell you, like, Amazon just laid off 16,000 people.
I just had one of them email me, and he was a little bit upset about like all in being cavalier about like AI is not going to take jobs. And I was like, no, I said for the last year or two that job displacement is going to happen. I am now more convinced than ever that the number of employees at big tech is going to stay the same or go down. It's been the same or down for 4 years, since 2021. It's been basically the same, 4 or 5 years. You look at the number of employees. They're going to cut more and more middle management because the job of middle management is being done not by Clawbot, forget that. The last year's set of tools, Raul, that we're using. What do middle managers do? They set up meetings. They build the agenda for the meeting. They take notes during the meeting, then they send the action items, then they make the action items get done. Then they do another meeting and another stand up to make sure that happened. That's all done by Zoom, Slack. It's all done already. You can get Applaud. I have Applaud on the back of my phone. You can record every meeting. It just gives you all the action items. You can have the action items automatically get sent. That's the last generation of tools is causing those 16,000 layoffs. What's this generation of tools going to do?
Yeah, I agree. Although, you know, they had some layoffs last year where they laid off from the entire organization. I have friends there that are, you know, I live in the Seattle area, so I have some friends at Amazon that tell me maybe it was like 8 months ago, 50% of their code was being vibe coded, is how they worded it. Now it's like 100%. Almost like all of it is, they're using Anthropic. They're deep in Anthropic and they use that tool. And, you know, same with Microsoft. Microsoft's doing the same thing, but I don't know what they're using because it's just a disaster. Their AI, I don't know what they use for, you know, they're certainly not using Copilot. But yeah, like, you know, it's happening now. And so these people are going to be out of jobs. So what's going to happen? Where are they going to go? You know, it's sort of like that South Park.
They got to start a company.
Yeah, they got to start a company. They have to have good ideas. Did you watch that South Park episode where, what was it, like Randy, like all the white collar jobs were being lost and he couldn't fix something in his house? I think something
broke.
Yes,
and the blue collar workers were coming. Yeah, the blue collar workers raising their prices.
Right, right.
Because there was nobody to do plumbing or, yeah, put up a shelf.
Yeah, yeah. So I actually wonder what's going to happen in the next few years with, you know, with the workforce. You know, because I think like in medicine, the general doctor, like the first doctor that you see, is going to be replaced with AI for sure. You know, radiologists will be replaced with AI. Software engineers definitely replaced. What's going to happen? What are those people going to do? Not everyone's an entrepreneur. They all don't have great ideas, right? Well, are we going to be on a UBI? You should think about that, Jason.
Yeah. Well, here, this is the email I got this morning. Longtime listener of All In Podcast, new AWS employee. I'm reaching out because you have a platform and your influence matters. Spent most of my career as a civilian, blah, blah, blah. I don't want to say that. Da, 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 da. I joined AWS, had multiple offers. AWS seemed like the best choice. One day short of my blank anniversary with AWS, I received the email that I'm part of the newest round of layoffs. I don't blame them, yada, yada, yada. I do blame AI All In a little bit. The roles being cut are very much seen as functions that can be replaced by AI. And by cutting these roles, AWS is forcing employees to adopt AI faster. You guys at All In seem to have your heads so far up each other's butts that you can't see what's happening outside your anal cavities. This isn't the case of AI will help you do your job better or faster. This is AI will now do your job. Your job isn't coming back. Instead of foaming at the mouth over all the efficiency about to be gained, start thinking about the social impacts that occur when unemployment increases by 200 basis points over the next year. I have the utmost respect for you guys, but I recently turned the podcast off because I'm frankly tired of listening to four rich guys who have completely lost touch with reality. And then I said to him, I've been the one saying that job displacement is actually happening. And he said, yes, I know you've been saying this. You're the only member of the pod I can email, though. So I'm telling my feelings to the entire group at you. Utmost respect.
I would say, like, the person has a point, but, you know, the proper response would be you can't uninvent AI. I'm sorry, but, like, if we don't lead the world in AI, China is going to lead the world in AI. That's a massive, massive national security threat.
And by the way, just on the China point, China's got a bigger issue than us because the people in China are not entrepreneurial by default, whereas Americans generally are. They have a little bit of a more rugged individualist there. It's a more conformist general philosophy. I'm painting with broad brushes here. It's not 100%. People in America are like, yeah, I got laid off. It sucked. I started my own company. I was a banker on Wall Street. You know, Great Recession happened. Me and my friend opened a bagel shop. We're crushing it now. I went back and got an electrician's thing. But this is happening so fast that AWS, according to this person, who knows if this is real, I could be getting spoofed as well. It could have been AI. Somebody could have just cloud-bottomed me. But I'm going to take it at its face value because of the details. If you do not learn to use these tools, the company is going to lay you off, and the people who do know how to use these tools will be the ones left. So in the case of Oliver and Lucas, if there's other people at the company who are like, I don't want to participate in this, the value of Oliver and Lucas is going to go, what do you think, Robert?
Absolutely.
A person using this tool is how much more productive 3 months after using it?
You get like 100 times at least, right?
Okay, you didn't say 100%. You said 100x. I want to make sure the audience understands what you're saying. Even if you're being hyperbolic and it's 10x, let me tell you, to a business owner, if it's 2x, if it's 50%, if you're exaggerating by, you know, 99%, it's still worth firing everybody who doesn't embrace it and then just working with the people here. That's it.
Yeah,
it's like over, if folks.
It's over.
This is it. This is not a drill. Where is my bullhorn when I need it? It's like, I need my bullhorn. It's not a drill, folks. Everything we've been talking about with AI just happened. Do you feel that way?
I mean, yeah, I do. I worry about the future for our kids. I've got one son who's building his own company, which he's probably going to figure something out.
Is he raising?
Not yet, but he's doing okay. something really
Let
cool.
Let me know when he's 12.
Yeah.
Get a permission slip.
Well, actually, no, he's past 12. My kids are older. And my middle son works at Microsoft. He's a senior software engineer there. So he's quite set in what he's doing. He does like all the kind of more complicated low level stuff that maybe enables AI. And then my daughter works at an AI company, like an AI entertainment company, and she does like marketing. But you know, I worry about like kids getting out of university. What are they going to do? And then I think about the opportunities. Like, look at the opportunities. Like a realtor, for example. You know, a realtor that has a small firm, say 10, 15 people, and they own a particular area, like Bellevue, Washington, or Kirkland, or something. They're well known in that area. They know nothing about these tools and they don't want to learn about these tools. But you hire, you know, somebody like, you know, like an Oliver or whoever to come in and use the tools and say, look, I can completely change your life overnight and automate all these features and stuff. That is a great opportunity. And that's
no, it's like, it's like that. Literally a superhero. Like you're running a farm, right? And all of a sudden, Superman shows up and he's like, can I work for you? And you're like, what's your scale? And he just goes and picks all the corn. Or like the Flash comes and you're like, I own a pizzeria. And like the Flash shows up and it's like, what can I do? And it's like, you can deliver these pizzas. And pizzas are delivered. You're like, wait a second. This makes no sense.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that's the opportunity. The opportunity is in like going into existing businesses and helping them grow their businesses using the tools. And, you know, and they might not realize you're only spending, you know, 2 hours a week doing the work, but you're doing the work and you're multiplying their business. So good for them. Get 5 clients and you've got a good job, right? You're going to make more money than you'll ever
need. Go ahead, Lucas. You don't have to raise your hand. Just talk.
Yeah, I will say that, you know, I have a lot of friends that from university that went into being software developers, software engineers at the Magnificent Seven. And a lot of them are really scared. But the thing that I keep in mind is the system thinkers, the ones that are actually able to piece everything together in their heads and then create something, are the ones that will make it out on top in this world. And now there's also people that didn't go through university or through these different programs, you know, a bachelor's degree, master's, that are still able to have that system thinking ability that can now be unlocked and a lot can be done.
If you can architect, you can see the big picture. You can understand like the mental, you can build a mental model of the business and like what matters. Like that is the skill now. It's not, can I like write code and get through that chore? It's, can you build a mental model of the business? Can you then creatively come up with ways to expand, grow, or otherwise improve the business and its products and services? So now the creative inherit the earth, right? The creative and the brave, that's it. Like, I think those are the skill sets for the future. Like, are you self-possessed? Do you have like the executive function to wake up every day and say, how do I improve this business? And then doggedly improve the business with these systems and building tools and services. My God, this has been another amazing episode of Twist. On Monday, we're going to do a review of all the different skills we can find. Best of Clawbot skills. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.